This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. Film buffs, airplane buffs, John Wayne buffs got a long-awaited treat this summer when the 1954 movie The High and the Mighty came out on home video for the first time. John Wayne plays a co-pilot on a trans-Pacific passenger plane. It turns into a terrifying ride as engines conk out and fuel dwindles. Scary stuff, but there's another side, too. The High and the Mighty is a vintage moment, a CinemaScope reminder of how cushy and glamorous airline travel used to be. Now, we wouldn't be the first to note the ways in which flying has been altered by events over the decades, but here, in the first 20 minutes or so of one movie, it's all on display. Bob Vanderlinden is curator of air transportation at the National Air and Space Museum here in Washington, D.C. We coaxed him into watching this artifact with us to share his observations of air travel circa 1954. He says the mid-50s marked a turning point in passenger flight.
The number of people flying actually finally exceeded the number of people taking steamships across the ocean and exceeded the number of people taking railroads across the country. So it's a watershed.
Okay, we're going to watch the beginning of The High and the Mighty here. This is the scene at the airport in Honolulu as passengers are getting ready to board the plane to fly to San Francisco.
Flight 21, now arriving, gate 1.
Okay, now here we are. We're inside the very attractive Honolulu Airport Terminal, and we're hearing an arrival announcement.
That's how they did it, like a train or a ship arriving. It wasn't that busy.
Now, one thing you notice right away, this is a tropical island, but everyone is dressed to the nines.
Always.
Hats, suits.
Always.
Gloves.
There are a couple of people in Hawaiian shirts, but that's about it.
Now we see a well-dressed businessman approaching the check-in counter.
Nice to have you with us, Mr. Flaherty. Please check with immigration now. You'll board in about 30 minutes. This is Miss Spaulding, your stewardess.
Okay, now, any
nice
number of things to talk about here. Check-in took about 5 seconds.
No line.
No line.
He's drunk.
The passenger, then.
Yes, and he's going to get drunker. They would not let him on the airplane these days.
And didn't look like any documents were required there.
No. And basically took his word that he's an American citizen.
It was 1954. Hawaii was not yet a state, so there's some immigration activity involved. And you have the flight attendant, or what was then called a stewardess, standing right there being introduced to the passengers at the check-in counter. This is Miss Spaulding, played by Doe Avedon.
May I introduce your stewardess?
Things are improving. I don't know where my luggage is. The Royal was supposed to send it down.
We'll check right into it, sir.
I love that they're going to actually get the luggage for him from his hotel.
That's passenger service.
You suppose it'll ever happen to me?
He had the flight attendant, the stewardess there, mooning about honeymooners, wondering when she'll ever get married. Stewardesses back then could not be married in
flight. No, they couldn't.
And the thinking there was, to the extent that there was thinking there?
To be blunt about it, rampant sexism. The typical traveler was a businessman, not a woman. They felt it would be in the airline's interest to have a very attractive, and that was one of the requirements. Not only did you have to be young and within certain height requirements and weight, you had to be pretty.
And single.
And single. You know, they were selling sex.
There's a DVD extra on here that talks about flying in the 50s, and they show a flight attendant who would have flown back then talking about how they were trained to calm people down. What they would do is fluff the pillows.
Fluff the pillows, yes.
I'm a fisherman. My family should be in fishermen for a couple hundred years, maybe more, I don't know.
We have a man approaching, laden down with packages. He's not one of the better-dressed members of this flight.
He still has a hat.
Has a hat.
Nervous first-time flyer.
Thank you, Mr. Lakota. Your plane will be announced in a few minutes. Don't you want us to check that through for you?
Okay, now he's pulled out a picnic basket filled with food, and the check-in man is trying to grab it away from him, and he's saying no, no, no.
Just a minute, Mr. Lakota. There you are.
I got in here my things for to eat for the trip.
Well, you've hurt my feelings, Mr. Lakota. Do you think you wouldn't eat my lunch or the steak we're going to have for dinner?
And he wants that food. He wants his own.
He just grabbed the salami.
Yeah.
I don't know about these things. I never fly before. I don't want to
may
make
not
no
need any explanation
nobody.
For that, Steve.
Serving you will be a pleasure.
We're back to that now.
Got to bring your own food.
Bring your own food.
Would they have back then taken that much pleasure in in-flight service, or was she just trying to calm a nervous passenger?
Well, actually, the in-flight service was quite nice. Even if you bought the coach or tourist fare ticket, you were served very nicely, and the food was quite good.
San Francisco. I must go to San Francisco.
Sorry, sir. We're departing very shortly. You're not on the list.
plane is boarding, but we've got one last-minute passenger.
Mr. Kenneth Childs is on your plane, isn't he?
Why, yes, Mr. Childs.
Okay, so he's divulged a passenger name. Wouldn't happen now.
True.
Fortunately, we have space available today. If you're an American citizen...
I am. Oh, I am, for sure.
So just walk up to the counter, last minute, and plunk down some cash, and you're on that flight.
Well, you could still do that today, although if you did that, when you went through security, you would be stopped for sure. And, of course, if they stopped him, they would find that he's carrying a pistol.
Oh, listen, honey, I always enjoy myself, but this place...
And here we go. They're on the tarmac, and the passengers are waiting on the tarmac next to the plane.
Notice the tight security.
Yes, nothing.
There's a low chain-link fence.
Toby, will you tell your mother something for me? Tell her I wish she'd come with you next time.
Okay, now here we're coming up on the moment that just makes you realize more than any other that we are not in 1954 anymore. You've got the little boy Toby going to be flying on this plane. He's got a holster with a toy pistol in it, and he's looking at John Wayne in the cockpit. And John Wayne makes eye contact with the little boy, and the little boy pulls out his toy gun, pretends to shoot the co-pilot there, and John Wayne sort of slumps over in his seat as if he's been killed. This was before, clearly before there was anything remotely connected to hijacking or anything like
that. Well, actually, stuff had happened, but not to the extent that it started in the 1960s.
You said stuff had happened in 1954.
There was a bombing of an airplane as early as 1933. They think it was a mob killing.
There's so many movies that have come out since this one about airplane travel. Do you see echoes of The High and the Mighty in other...
Oh, constantly. This was the first of this type of movie. If you look at this movie and you're familiar with the wonderfully funny and outrageous movie Airplane, there are an awful lot of similarities. You can see where they were inspired.
What kinds of things?
The overacting of the characters, the situations they were in, the flashbacks. And, of course, having Robert Stack in both movies didn't hurt.
Bob Vanderlinden, thanks for coming in to talk with us about The High and the Mighty.
Thank you.
Bob Vanderlinden is curator of air transportation at the Smithsonian Institution's National Air and Space Museum here in Washington, D.C. One musical footnote here. The High and the Mighty was nominated for 6 Oscars, but only won an Oscar for its score by composer Dmitri Tiomkin. This lush musical theme weaves all through the movie, and it became a hit song. But many filmgoers from the 50s will remember this whistled version. John Wayne's character, the co-pilot, is known as Whistling Dan Roman. But for all his many talents, John Wayne did not whistle on the soundtrack. The well-known Hollywood whistler Muzzy Marcellino was called in to do the honors. This is NPR, National Public Radio.